Meanwhile, in the United States, protests are taking place in university campuses across the country against America's ongoing support for Israel in the war in Gaza, and hundreds of students have been arrested. New York's Columbia University has been at the forefront, and Bruce Shapiro has been watching events unfold outside his office window. Bruce is, of course, the executive director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University. Bruce, what's been happening at Columbia over the last couple of weeks?
What hasn't been happening, I think, is the question, Philip. It's been a kind of astonishing turn of events. It's really, you know, you and I usually talk about events from a distance. Here we really are up close and personal. I am about 300 yards from the encampment in front of Columbia's Butler Library. I look out in the morning and I see students doing their morning yoga practice and studying in between getting up and chanting. Look, we're in the middle on this campus of a campus crisis, which in turn has now, as you said, spilled out around the country. And it begins not so much with student protest as with authorities' reaction to it, various authorities' reaction to it. You know, up until about a week ago, students here were protesting and they had assembled a small tent city on one of the great lawns on the Columbia campus, where it was, as one colleague of mine put it, interfering with nothing except for Frisbee. But university leaders decided they needed to do something about it, in part because it was just unauthorized and had tents erected on the university lawn, and in part because Columbia has been taking a beating in the media, like a lot of American universities, because of anti-Israel protest, because of anti-Zionist language among protesters, which in turn gets spilled over into accusations of anti-Semitism and a very messy campus atmosphere. And as a result, the president of the university trustees decided to take those tents down and brought in New York City Police Department, who arrested 100 students. Now, students getting arrested happens a lot all over the world. But here at Columbia, it evokes a singular reaction because one of the fundamental events deep in the institutional memory of this university was the brutal arrest of more than 700 students in 1968, after Columbia students took over as part of the anti-Vietnam War movement, the university's administration building. And that has made not having the NYPD on campus a virtual article of faith. The result was that after these 100-plus students were arrested and suspended, hundreds more students returned to the Butler Library lawn, a different part of the lawn, erected a second set of tents. Faculty who had stayed on the sidelines really rose up in rebellion, not so much on some on the Gaza issue, but more on issues of academic freedom, and having the president of the university having called the NYPD onto campus. And so within 48 hours, this campus went from a kind of normal late spring of protest to being in flames over, not in literal flames, but in profoundly emotional, profoundly distressing, profoundly angry argument over Gaza, the university's investments in Israel, over academic freedom, and in particular over President Manu Shafiq's testimony before the Republican-led House committee that was supposedly investigating anti-Semitism on college campuses, the same one that got the president of Harvard and Penn fired just a couple of months ago. It was a real House Un-American Activities Committee kind of inquisition.
So the students want an end to the war in Gaza. They want America to stop selling arms to Israel. But tease out this other thing you said, that they're calling for Colombia to divest any investment in Israel.
Yeah, well, there has been a long-standing divestment movement on this campus and on many campuses in the U.S., modeled on the South Africa divestment movement of the 1980s. Of course, they use language comparing Israel's attitude toward Palestinians and its own Arab citizens to apartheid. And there's a call to take the substantial endowments that this university has and divest them of any businesses that facilitate military hardware or the use of force by the IDF in Gaza. In addition, Columbia has a joint degree program with Tel Aviv University and has been planning for many years a sort of satellite office, a global center in Tel Aviv, very much like those it has in Amman and Beijing and a number of other cities. The students have been demanding that those be shut down as well. All of those have been no movement areas for the university administration.
There must be real concerns for Jewish students who no longer feel safe on campus.
What's interesting about this is that the Jewish community on this campus is actually quite divided. On the one hand, there are many Jewish students who have been alarmed at the escalation of anti-Zionist language, which in their view makes them uncomfortable and is equated with anti-Semitism. But it's also important to say that the anti-war movement itself, the encampment itself, is filled with Jewish students. There's a disproportionate number of Jewish students in that group who some view themselves as anti-Zionist Jews, some simply are anti-war. There was a Seder in the encampment the other night. There has been some very ugly language hurled at Jewish students and at Palestinian and Arab students and Muslim students generally, Islamophobic language, but most of that has not actually been on campus. Most of that has been out on the street, outside the university's gates, where huge numbers of very vituperative and very sectarian protesters on both sides of the issue divide.
Bruce, Congress has been putting a huge amount of pressure on the university presidents, haven't they?
Yes, and it's coming from multiple directions. On the one hand, the faculty here and the students were very angry at University President Manoush Shafiq, newly arrived in this office just a few months ago. But some of the university's donors, the billionaire Robert Kraft, others have also said that they think that students should have been dealt with much more harshly, that the atmosphere has become intolerable, et cetera. And then you've got Republicans in Congress. Elise Stefanik, who has become the sort of attack figure, one of the attack figures on the Trump right, and her special committee have called for the president of the university to resign. Actually, there are those who say that this attack from outside may have saved President Shafiq's job because many faculty were angry at her and were arguing for a resolution of censure before the university senate that got watered down in light of all of these Republican attacks from the outside. It's a very complicated time here.
Bruce, a couple university presidents have been forced to resign. There was the, you know, Claudine Gay at Harvard, and I also think the president of the University of Pennsylvania.
Indeed, they were forced out not by protest, but through the first, several months ago, the first of these congressional hearings into supposed campus anti-Semitism. And I say supposed not because there isn't some anti-Semitism, but because certainly in my experience here at Columbia, the degree is greatly exaggerated and there's been profound conflation of criticism with Israel, of Israel with anti-Semitism, not the same thing at all. But, you know, the Trump right has seized on the question of anti-Semitism on college campuses and has been doing everything it can to heighten tensions. So this congressional hearing now a week ago, which sparked or which was the prelude to
Bruce, you've got a lot of Jewish and Muslim students at Columbia. So how has your president handled the conflict?
With great difficulty. Her messaging until very recently was nearly all about preserving order. A lot of messaging about anti-Semitism, none about or very little about Islamophobia or protecting Palestinian or Muslim students. That in turn has gone over badly. It has not been a comfortable couple of weeks for our president. And what's quite striking, and I don't hold the president alone responsible for this, what is quite striking is that a series of steps, beginning with President Shafiq's congressional testimony and then extending through the suspension of these students and calling the police and et cetera, actually achieved exactly the opposite result of what was intended. We've gone from a small contained protest to a true campus-wide, not that all students are involved, but a much larger rebellion. We've got something that was confined to the Columbia campus that now has become a national tactic, erecting tent cities on university campuses, arguing for divestment, et cetera, and then universities responding by calling the cops and arresting people, has been a really striking outcome.
Bruce, let's go from your president to the plight of a certain ex-president. The Supreme Court has been debating the limits of presidential immunity.
Well, this is really crucial, and it actually ties in some way to the overheated atmosphere of this campus. You know, President Trump, facing federal prosecution, has argued that he's automatically immune for anything he did while in office, whether it was voter fraud, whether it was keeping classified documents, all those federal charges that we've been talking about for months. The Supreme Court, after dragging its feet, finally heard arguments last week, and it was quite striking listening to the debate how the most of the Republican-appointed conservative justices like Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, et cetera, kept changing the subject. None of them wanted to talk about the conduct of which President Trump has been accused, you know, voter fraud, trying to intimidate election officials in Georgia, et cetera. None of those issues were the things they wanted to talk about. They kept saying, well, presidents do need to have discretion, and we don't want to unleash each president prosecuting their predecessor, which, of course, was not on the table, as Justice Sonia Sotomayor pointed out. The swing vote in this seems to be one of Trump's appointees, Amy Coney Barrett, who did seem skeptical of the president's claims. But there is a real chance that while they, I think, are going to reject the overall idea of presidential immunity, they are going to draw a line saying that this has to go back to the lower courts to argue about, well, what's private conduct versus what's the conduct of his office, further slowing down what has already been the bogged down federal prosecution of President Trump, meaning that it may not get to court, if it gets to court at all, until 2025.
Bruce, that's while the wider world may feel a lot of contempt for your Supreme Court, Donald Trump is still having trouble keeping quiet about the trial, isn't he? He's been threatened with substantial fines for, yes, contempt of court.
Well, this is, of course, the other trial, the one that's going on now, the New York trial. fraud trial, which was not what was at issue in the Supreme Court hearing. And yes, of course, he has kept denouncing witnesses like Michael Cohen, his former fixer, despite and retweeting threatening language from others, despite gag orders from Judge Juan Merchan. And Judge Merchan now is considering motions from a prosecutor to hold Trump in contempt, which would involve substantial and perhaps escalating fines. Probably not jail, at least not yet. Former President Trump can't seem to control his social media trigger finger, even though Judge Merchan has issued very firm directives over and over again about not questioning witnesses, not intimidating jurors, etc. There's a real sense that this trial going on in New York does become a test of the ability of the criminal justice system to rein in a defendant who quite literally has genuine contempt for the institution, who every day gets up before microphones and talks about what a fake prosecution it is and all of this, and who seems determined to ignore the court's guidelines. Any other defendant, it is very clear, would have been held in contempt long ago.
I like the way you keep saying former president rather than future. Bruce Shapiro. Bruce is contributing editor with The Nation magazine and executive director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.